So as we worshiped in God's presence, let us hear his word as we prepare to open our hearts to hear what he wants to tell us, to see what he wants to show us through the testimony and witness of Vicky. Our first scripture comes from Jeremiah 29:11. Many of you might know this well. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. Our second is from Esther, chapter 2, verses 5 through 7. Now there was a Jew who lived in the palace complex in Susa. His name was Mordecai, the son of Jer, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. His ancestors had been taken from Jerusalem with the exiles and carried off with King Jehoiakim of Judah and King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon in exile. Mordecai had reared his cousin Hadassah, otherwise known as Esther, since she had no father or mother. The girl had a good figure and a beautiful face, and after her parents died, Mordecai had adopted her. And then Esther 4:14. Then Mordecai said to Esther what had been said, given to him in this message. Don't think that just because you live in the king's house and you're the one Jew who can get out of this alive. If you persist in staying silent at a time like this, help and deliverance will arrive for the Jews from someplace else. But you and your family will be wiped out. Who knows? Maybe you were made queen for such a time as this.
Maya Angelou was a rare and gifted writer, and her words are very, very soothing. And as a pastor, I often have the privilege of sitting in my office and getting to know people and their stories very deeply. And one of Maya's quotes has moved me to listen intently to those sharing their stories with me. She writes, "There is no greater agony than hearing an untold story inside of you." I'm sorry. "There is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside of you." In other words, your story matters. Everyone's story matters. No matter how different we are from each other, no matter how we think, how we look, how we act, what our cultures are from, what our backgrounds are, everybody's story matters. And during these past weeks of Lent, we here at Marian have heard the words transformation and transforming, which according to Webster's dictionary mean a dramatic change. There are many reasons that children lose their parents, including when their parents die. And the Bible doesn't offer any details about Esther's parents, how they died. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of that whole story, because her cousin Mordecai knew the story, but he didn't base his decision to adopt Esther on the deeds of her parents. Mordecai reached out in compassion. It was part of God's plan. God whispering to Esther, "I have not forgotten you, and I never will." And many dramatic changes took place all through Esther's life, and eventually she became Queen of Israel. An adoption story is a truly transformative one. It's a transformative one for all who are involved. Over a lifetime, God is at work transforming people with genuine care. I have had the rare opportunity of hearing the amazing story and the miraculous story of a little Asian girl who didn't stand a chance in life without the dramatic changes of many people. Vicky shared some of her story with the women's ministry several years ago, but it's a worthwhile one for all of her faith community and others to hear for such a time as this.
It's a little different when there's nobody. Am I on? when there's nobody here. So I'm a little nervous. You know, it's always neat to hear from others' journeys. And we heard one years ago, and when I was in the car with my husband, I said, you know, you're never going to get me up here. Never in a million years. Well, guess what? I'm up here. I don't know how, but I'm up here. But I'm so glad that I was able to share this. When Pastor Connie asked me to share my faith journey several months ago, I was okay with this, not giving it a second thought until right now, until I stand in front of all of you. This is so out of my comfort zone, and it really is. I'm used to talking in front of small first graders, and I have one here today, and I have one back there that I used to have 2 years ago. I'm not used to talking in front of them. I'm not used to talking to adults. So I'm going to pretend that this is my overflowing first grade class full of first graders to share how I have seen God in my life. My story is no doubt is completely different from yours. It includes abandonment, faith, sacrifice, freedom, love, future, opportunities, support, education, family, emotional healing, and gratitude. My story is about selfless acts and sacrifices of people change their lives, our own lives, to make futures for our God's little children. As I look back, I truly believe that God has placed several angels in my personal life, and each time it was for such a time as this, a moment when an angel was needed. In today's society, we view the world as everything is about me, isn't that so? And what is best for me? I know I'm guilty of that. Romans 12:13 says, take care of God's needy people and welcome strangers into your home. These are my three angels here, Madame Vuti Nye, Dr. Tom Dooley, Betty Tisdale, and my adopted parents, Viv and Vern Shinsky. So let's go back to the Vietnam War, which started in 1955 and ended in 1975. The U.S. was involved in hoping to prevent a communist takeover of South Vietnam. By the mid-50s, North Vietnam was in a state of poverty and hunger, combined with fighting causing 2 million deaths. Madame Nye, which is all the way at the top, was a wealthy, athletic woman who lost her family members in the war. She decided to flee south, fearing her own life. She and her neighbors would take under their wing abandoned children or children sitting next to their deceased parents, as she encountered along the way. She felt the need to care for these children. She called them her own. Madame Nye established an annex called An Lạc Orphanage, which is translated to Happy Place, caring for children of all ages who are malnourished and handicapped with many health issues. I am simply amazed how, and still in awe, how one woman risked her life and her personal belongings for so many orphans. That is why I call her my first angel. Her calling was taking care of all of God's children for such a time as this. The next significant person was Dr. Tom Dooley, a U.S. Navy lieutenant. He was devoted to his work and gave countless hours helping the sick. In his several trips to South Asia, he became more involved in helping Madame Nye. He located some old French army barracks and converted them into orphanages. He was deeply moved by what Madame Nye was doing for those orphans and decided to write a book called Deliver Us from Evil. Tom stated, whenever my spirits were usually low, I would get into my Jeep after sundown and drive to An Lạc Orphanage, where there was always laughter. God placed a heart of gold in this young man who truly dedicated his work for orphans. He helped establish 17 hospitals in 12 countries. The next person known as the Angel of Saigon was a young woman named Betty Tisdale. She came across Tom's book, Deliver Us from Evil, and was inspired by what he was doing in Southeast Asia. Betty visited Tom several times in the hospital while he was battling cancer at a very young age. He had shared details about Anlock and the work he has done with Madam Nye. On January 18, 1961, at age 34, Tom Dooley passed away. Betty knew that God was calling her to move mountains to save all the children in the orphanage. Betty decided to make her first trip to Vietnam Orphanage. She quotes, "When I saw these babies, as you see up here, in the hammocks made of rags strung between rusty cribs, emaciated babies laying there with rags worn as diapers on the floor, I knew that my life had changed forever. And as I look at the picture, I sometimes wonder," right here, up here, sitting up, "if that is possibly me or my twin sister." Betty knew that something had to be done, and she was not going to leave all these babies without a future. They deserved to have a second chance. Life was no longer living about for herself, but for these children. Through generous donations and her life savings, Betty made numerous trips to help Madam Nye with the orphans. In each of her trips, she would arrange to airlift small children, groups of children out of the country. Finding out that the U.S. troops were pulling out because of the impending fall of Saigon in 1973, 17 months later, Betty's biggest challenge was to evacuate the entire orphanage. In the book called Chicken Soup for the Soul, which is right here, there's a story called She Saved 219 Lives. To sum up the story, Betty went to Dr. Dan, Vietnam's social welfare office, and was told that he would only approve children under the age of 10, and they must have birth certificates. Well, of course, none of the children had birth certificates. We were lucky they were still alive. Betty went to the hospital pediatric department and obtained 225 blank birth certificates. Given a short amount of time, due to this, by guessing ages and birth dates, she miraculously created 219 legal birth certificates. This was the only hope of these children once they arrived on the U.S. grounds. Next, Betty needed to find housing for these children. She called the commanding general. There was no answer. Then she called the Secretary of the Army, Beau Calloway, who did not return her phone calls. Betty was in dire straits to figure out and needed to do something quickly. She wasn't turning back on any of these children. She had come way too far. She knew that the Secretary of the Army was from Georgia. Betty ended up calling his mother, mind you, his mother, and pleaded her case. Calloway's mother made sure things were taken care of. You know how moms are, they make sure. The next morning, Beau Calloway responded back, because he had to obey his mother, and arranged for the school at Fort Benning and was to be used to house us orphans until we were adopted. Dr. Tisdale, which is Betty's husband, guaranteed payment of $21,000 for an airline ticket or airline to transport for the love of the orphans. If Betty had more time to line up everything to transport the children, she had been able to get the plane for nothing. The smallest box that you see here, a 2x2, was the smallest of us, was placed in the cardboard boxes as they transport us in there. Every child was adopted within 1 month, in the U.S. Now, this story is told by my mom and dad of their process of my sister and my adoption. Knowing that we were not able to have children on our own, we began to think of an adoption and decided to contact the Methodist Board of Child Care. After going through a home study, and we were placed on the waiting list. About a year later, we decided to contact, and we were told that we were receiving very few babies. For adoption, it was suggested that we consider overseas adoption. We were aware of the efforts of the Pearl Buck Foundation and applied for a little girl from Korea. Our names were placed on their waiting list, but we were more than 100 names down. A fellow officer, Navy officer, helped us get our names closer to the top of the list. After several weeks, we had given up hope of receiving a child. But one Saturday morning, as we were having a late breakfast, the phone rang. It was Betty. She asked if we were still interested, what kind of child we were interested in, and whether we had any children of our own. I can't even say. We said we had hope for a little girl under two, and she explained she was looking for homes but not wanted to place the orphans in a childless home. We were about to hang up the phone when she said, but we have a set of two-year-old twins, and if you would like, or if you would be willing to take both of them, she would make it happen. 4 days later, we drove to Pennsylvania and picked up our twins. Sorry. I was trying to do this without crying. I can't see. That's what happened. Released for adoption from my sister and I were April 29th, 1975. We supposedly had just turned 2 years old. When we arrived, we were in just a little, in a diaper with a little white top. Health-wise, we had parasites and boils and just grunted. No language spoken at all. My parents were handed little two-year-old Vietnamese twin girls, adoption papers, and our birth certificates in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. When our parents picked us up, they had put us in matching dresses that were too big, probably 2 to 3 sizes too big, and shoes that were 2 sizes too big. They had no idea what to expect. Madam Nye had given all the children who did not have names her middle name and her last name. So as far as we know, my Vietnamese name is Vu Thi Minh Phong, which means Vu is the common Vietnamese last name. Thi Minh is my middle name that indicates female, only for females, bright, and Phong, my first name, which is sweet, good essence. The birth date that I was given was April 7th, 1973. On July 8th, 1976, my American name became Victoria Joy Shinsky. Also in 1976, our dad had orders from the Navy and we were moving to Cairo and we lived there for 3 years. After that, resided in Brookville, Maryland. During my childhood, I attended a Methodist church. I was confirmed and helped assist the Sunday school teacher, helped in the nursery, and was an acolyte and read scriptures during church services. Around Michaela's age, 10, I became then more curious about where I was from. I knew that we certainly did not look like our parents and any of our extended family. We would ask our parents where we were born, where our biological parents were. They told us that we were born in Saigon, Vietnam, and lived in an orphanage called An Lac. Our parents had had us watch a movie on NBC called Children of An Lac. Betty informed us that our adoptive parents, that our dad had died, and our mom couldn't take care of us, so she dropped us off at the orphanage. We were told then at the time also that the orphanage had burnt to the ground and had very little information about our background. I felt as though as my part of my life was gone. I was angry, I was frustrated, and it was more towards God, because I didn't believe him. There were times at night I would look at the stars, asking. My thoughts were, poor me, why did God take my pains? I would eat. You have ruined my life, and it's not fair. So God, why did you take me from my parents? Will I ever find my parents or my other family members? Why would Madame Nye risk her life and possessions to save so many abandoned children? If I had not had these people who gave their selfless acts, where would I be right now? I have so many questions that I don't know I will ever know the answers. There were thoughts of finding ways to make everything go away. I even asked God to take my life. I wanted to go home and be with my biological parents that I have been missing for a good part of my life. Again, God was not finished with me here on this earth. God had a plan in my life. During my school years, I knew I felt was different from my peers, not in just my looks. I was placed in a lower reading group, special ed classes, and I had also repeated first grade. Due to our language barrier, I had to work harder. Learning did not come easy for me. Many tears of trying to get homework done. My parents spent hours and hours working with me, hiring tutors for me over the summer. Peers would make fun of me. When they asked me, what did you do over the summer? I would tell them I went to summer school or I had a tutor. For example, when the bell rang, it was math class, my friends would say, hey, math class is this way. I told them and I had math with Mr. Hill. Their response was, oh, that is for the dumb kids. During the high school pep rally, sitting next to a football jock with his friends around him, he turned and asked me, why are your eyes slanted that way? How did you both and your sister come out of your mother at the same time at birth? What kind of question is that? Figure it out. Now I lost my. Anger was welling up inside me, and I did not know how to respond. All I wanted to do is to get up and leave, but I couldn't. I was stuck. All I heard was giggling around him, and his girlfriend at the time told him that it's enough. Leave her alone. The girl knew I was upset and saw me get teary-eyed. From elementary to high school, I was made fun of for my physical looks to my learning disabilities. Words are a powerful thing, and it either makes you or it breaks you. It makes you a stronger person, I'm sorry. I took those words and believed that I was dumb. I knew I wasn't the smartest and popular kid. There were times where I wanted to end my life, so I closed my eyes and prayed to be with my biological parents. It seemed like a safe place for me. You know, when you go home and tell your mom that someone hurt you with mean words, and all you want to hear is, it'll be okay, and want to be held. Well, I kept those feelings inside for a very long time and didn't tell anybody but my sister. She understood because it happened to her. And I was just sharing that with my parents and reading this, and they didn't know. I attended a community college, then to Frostburg State University to earn a BA as a K-5 teacher, went to graduate school earning a master's degree as a reading specialist. Looking back at my school days, I can see that God has made me a stronger person to overcome these obstacles. God knew I needed to have faith in myself. I worked harder and didn't let kids get me down with those harsh words. I was the type of student that all I wanted to do is to impress my teachers and work harder to prove to myself that I can do it. My first grade teacher, Mrs. Starkey, and the other teachers inspired me to encourage me to become who I am today. I want to be like her. On a postcard, I can still remember, she wrote to me, "Never give up in what you want to do, go for the gold." She believed in me, and she knew that God had a plan for me that made me work even harder and believe that I can become anything I wanted to be. While I was attending college, my sister actually was able to contact Betty Tisdale, who lived in Seattle, Washington, and found out there was a 25th anniversary with the orphans from the ANLOC and the airline crew in Baltimore, Maryland. And this is the group. There. And the guy in the blue, I still connect with him today. He actually lives in Georgia. Our family attended a reunion. We were able to meet Betty Tisdale for the first time. As she walked in the entryway, there were no words to explain the feeling of seeing one who has made a huge difference in 219 lives. As if it was as if an angel walked into the room and nothing comes out of your mouth. Just tears of happiness for one who risks her own life to make a difference for these children as we stand right in front of her. In the past few months, I've decided to take a DNA test, and I've been wanting to do it a long time, and my husband was all in support of that, to see the region where I was from. Once I received the results, I was nervous, but I was excited at the same time. I am 82% Asian East, 15% Polynesian Hawaiian, Asian South, and then 3% other, which is Nepal, Pakistan, Bangladesh. Even though I might never find my relatives, I have come to the point in my life that I'm sort of okay with that. I can see how God has played an important part of my life. I am extremely blessed and loved by Madam Nye, who poured out her love and care for the children, Tom Dooley, who stepped out to help medical needs that needed attention, Betty Tisdale, who had faith, persistence, and an angel for her 219 orphans, my adopted parents, and I will forever be thankful for all they have given me, stuck with me from elementary to grad school. I am truly living the goal that my first grade teacher set for me. I taught fifth grade and second grade in a public school system, and now I'm a first grade teacher at Shalom Christian Academy. If I were not alive or living in the States, I would not have the opportunity to work with a wide range of diverse teachers in Prince George's County. I have been fortunate to work with different cultures in the college and teaching environment. It helped me grow as an individual who they truly are inside. I love working with African Americans, Yugoslavians, China, Korean, American, Hispanic, and Indian teachers. In 2005, I married Brian, another angel, who I met during the Marian Mennonite Youth Dinner Theater in the old Sunday school rooms. If you don't know, my Aunt Lorraine and Neil Mishler, they used to attend here, and they set us up. And I wasn't feeling the greatest, and I said, "I don't want to go, but I will go anyways. What do I have to lose?" There he is. I moved to Marion into his house. God gave us two beautiful children. It has been a wonderful lifestyle and wouldn't change it for the world. From a 45-minute drive on the Beltway to school to now Route 11, 2 minutes. Pretty nice. To Shalom. Working with many nationalities to one nationality. It took me a little time to fit in, and it was hard, but I see myself fitting in where I'm needed. I became that teacher that Mrs. Starkey believed I could be. Being a teacher, it gives back and building a foundation for our students. I am always amazed how God brought people together that I have connected over the years. This year, a parent of a little girl who's sitting right back here, I taught 2 years ago, who bought me a Christmas gift, and when opening it, it was an angel. right here. As I look closer, I notice it was made from Vietnam. My parent slash friend had no idea that the lady Betty who brought us out of Saigon was called the Angel of Saigon. And she was truly an angel. The number one item on my bucket list is to go back to Saigon, now called Ho Chi Minh City, and see everything. On my journey, God has opened my eyes that it isn't about me. It's the one who God had placed in my life, who I have made long-lasting difference. God has placed faithful people to help save his, and it's his children, no matter what. We are so easy to see and talk about other appearances and reactions, and are extremely quick to judge others without knowing who they truly are. Isn't that so? You need to set your opinions aside, change your attitude, and step out of your comfort zone and help and welcome others. I do this all the time in my job, and I have certainly learned a lot and love getting to know people and make connections. It doesn't matter how young, old, rich, poor, color of your skin, the shape of your eyes, whether you're stout, thin, short, tall, disabilities, God is the one who made us, and we are all unique in some way. We are here to care and support all of his children. So here it is. What is the takeaway? Are you listening to the calling in your life, or is it that you're too busy to hear it? Who is the person in your life that has made a difference? Are you that person in someone's life that you made a difference to? You need to be the one God is calling to make a difference in Christ, for Christ in someone else's life. Listen to the call, your calling like Betty, my angel, did. Here's a quote. Betty has proven repeatedly that you can do anything at all if you are simply willing to ask, not to settle for a no, to do whatever it takes to preserve it. Tom also stated it takes ordinary people to do extraordinary things. And my last thing was, that is our family, we had the opportunity to go over to Vietnam. We're planning a trip next fall. So we will be taking our kids to see everything, which is huge for such as time as this. Thank you.
It is one thing to read a story in a magazine and to think, wow, that's an interesting story. But to actually know somebody who's been through something like this is just amazing. And it took a lot of courage. And Elizabeth's opening words were so right on with the bravery and courage that it took. So building a kinder and an all-embracing community has been our church's theme for the past several weeks. And I think we learned again today that everyone's story matters, no matter what that story may sound like or what it looks like, and we have to be willing to listen to everyone's story with genuine care. Our story is not their story. Their story is not our story. We have not walked in their shoes. And the only way we can learn from each other and grow with each other is through being real, to step out from behind the shadows and share in full light our truths. There is no shame in being adopted, and today Vicki has exemplified what it means to love beyond borders of bloodline and to give beyond the focus of oneself. This is what our world desperately needs. Esther was told, "You were born for such a time as this," and woven throughout her story, Vicki spoke a beautiful message of time and destiny. She knew she had never been alone and was often reminded in her various situations, "For such a time as this." And although Vicki's ministry to bless her students and other children may not be quite as grand as the scale of Queen Esther's opportunities, Vicki certainly has an opportunity to make a difference. And that is what she has challenged us to do today as followers of Jesus. We are all given for such a time as this moment. What will we do with them? We all have a gift of some sort to share. And it can just be the story of our lives. It can just be a smile or a hug or a song or whatever. But whatever God gives us to share is extremely significant. Each one of us has that. So thank you, Vicki. Thank you for reminding us that whatever we face, we are called to a greater destiny. Thank you.